Welcome to the Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Your weekend wake-up tradition for the last 30 years.
It's Rosie on the House.
Good morning, Arizona. Come on into my house. We've got the whole gang here. I'm Rosie. The show is Rosie on the House. My son and co-host Romy Romero is here in studio with me. Good morning, bud.
Good morning.
And, of course, my wife, sweet Jennifer, is also in studio this morning. Good morning, babe.
Good morning.
Got our broadcast engineer, Mr. Gary D, in the engineering room. Gary.
Good morning.
Buenos dias, my friend. Woo! 7 o'clock hour is always our fun follow-us-if-you-can hour. We go everywhere and anywhere on any topic. 8 o'clock is our outdoor living segment. We have John J. Harper coming in this morning. 9 o'clock is our open line hour, where any project you're trying to tackle, we invite you to call. But I will tell you now, I will advise you now, that in the 9 o'clock hour, Jennifer will get on her soapbox. So it's a not-to-miss segment. You're going to want to be here for that. And the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to be going deep and talking in great detail about air conditioning, that one component of your home that you most rely on here through these cruel Arizona summer months. And if you think it's been bad up to date, it's about ready to get a little bit worse.
And you mention often that a lot of people say, well, what if I introduce evap cooling and won't that help my air conditioning unit? No, if that was the case, Houston wouldn't be the most air conditioned city. They hit a record demand load this week in Houston for electricity. They had all power generators going. And they could hardly keep up.
Yeah. Folks, when it's raining in Arizona to the tune of about a half an inch of rain an hour, that's just Houston humidity. they don't even call that rain. It's just humid outside. And speaking of electricity, we had our APS guest in last week talking about what electricity is. I can't tell you the number of phone calls I got. And said, You got to do that again.
Gary said it was a record number of podcasts listened to for that hour.
Podcast through the roof.
Oh, really?
I listened to it a second time because it was so fascinating. I never thought about, you can't see it, but where does it come from?
What is electricity? Now, you know what? I'm going to take you deeper than that. You know, I was trying to take him there to what is gravity. I mean, without gravity, you got nothing. Nothing.
Everything floats.
Everything floats. Nothing orbits. Mm-hmm. There's no magnetism. So you can't create electricity. Gravity. It's omnipresent. Now, if we could determine if it's omniscient. And the astronomers are talking about, and we're going to have Dr. Sky on just at the bottom of the hour, 7:30, about this thing called dark matter. Nobody can define it, but it fills all the voids in the universe and holds the universe together.
Jesus?
In catechism class, we called that God.
Yeah. Same here.
You know, we didn't call it dark matter. We called it God. Oh, man. So I really had a lot of fun conversations this past week with just friends who had been listening to the show. And they said, you know, I just never even thought of electric. I just flipped the switch and it's there, you know, and you'd never think about it's a naturally occurring phenomenon that man has learned how to harness, manufacture, direct, and put to use. And I had a lot of comments about the description of our dinner, that Jennifer and ours dinner the night before had been scallops and salmon and shrimp, all served on a bed of wild rice and in an air-conditioned kitchen while Jennifer was listening to her Pandora Boss Gag Station on the radio, on the stereo system. Now, 300 years ago, we would have both been in loincloths, stooping over a little fire that she had started by rubbing sticks together, roasting a jackrabbit that I would have dug out of a hole.
I'll go for the scallops and shrimp.
But we would have been under, at that point, we would have been under a true dark sky. And that's one of the things we're going to talk to Dr. Sky about at 7:30, about this new artificial light is killing the night article in USA Today yesterday. But how about this nice little weather we're getting today? You, Romy, you get downpoured?
Not when I was home. Amanda said it came down pretty good a little bit later. But as I was leaving, the water drops on the skylight sounded like they were like 3 ounces a drop.
Oh, they were big, huh?
But not frequent.
How about the flood at Havasupai?
They had
to helicopter fly in food for the folks down there and evacuate people. Hikers were trapped on the island and caught. And
that was earlier this week.
They lost all their camping gear downstream. Yeah, that was just this past week. And we're in the middle of one of the biggest droughts. We're in a 20-year drought right now. And as history tells us, as we study natural history, it's one of the worst droughts in the last 1,200 years. The last 1,200. Lake Mead is 1 foot away from going to tier one rationing.
I had a friend whose family went boating just this last week, and they go to Mead frequently. And they have a big boat, and they have a two-wheel drive truck. And they got up there.
Drove all the way to Mead.
Drove up there with the boat, and they had let so much water out of the lake that it took a four-wheel drive to get your boat in.
Oh, no.
It's their normal place, and they spent another 4 hours trying to find a place to put in. They finally found one, but that put them an hour and a half from the hotel. So it's do your homework before you go.
Romy, you and Remy could drive to Mead with Big Red and just charge $20 a boat. Put it in
put
and
them
out.
In and put,
put them in and put them out. But here's some encouraging news. We're in the worst drought of the last 1,200 years, one of the worst droughts. But catch this. In Maricopa County, which was last year the fastest growing county in the entire nation, we're using one-third the water that we were using per capita in 1980, and our population has since doubled.
How does that work?
We've doubled the population, and we're using one-third less water. A lot of it has to do with that stupid plumbing code change in the 90s, where all your toilets had to go from about 4.5 gallons per flush to a gallon and a half.
But now everybody's flushing twice, so that's 3 gallons as opposed to four, right?
Well, now originally, toilets have gotten a lot better.
What was that wrong?
Originally, that was the case. But like Dad said, the toilets are a lot better now that can do that. And I was talking to Greg Peterson yesterday. If you have our home maintenance calendar, you may be expecting to hear about composting next Saturday. But with the rain and this water shortage and drought, he said, let's do water harvesting. And
great.
We're going to talk about stacking functions. You know, he's a big proponent of you don't use something once. When the water comes in, you shower, you then gray water system that goes out and waters your trees.
Sure.
And then, so it's multi-purpose. He calls it stacking function. So we thought, you know, it's time appropriate. It's water. One thing that really hit for me, we've always said, we don't get enough rain in the desert area to warrant water harvesting. But the numbers he had was 600 gallons would be generated off of a 1,000-square-foot roof per inch of rain. How much that would help recover everything that's been so drought-ridden for almost this last year, what that extra water just taken from your roof and put to your tree.
Tucson is really big on the rain harvesting. They get
a little
more
bit
than, more than the
600 gallons an inch of rain on 1,000 square feet water harvesting. Did you see the article in the paper from the guest columnist? Like, I don't know who he is. The man's name is Steve Grace. Here's what Romy. Now this is water harvesting right here, baby. Two 4-foot diameter pipes from Lewiston, Idaho to Lake Mead. And he's going to refill Lake Mead, draining the Snake River. He's going to take the equivalent of an 8-foot diameter straw, run it 900 miles, mostly across Nevada. He states it's mostly government property.
And flat, you say.
And it's flat. It's not like, he compares it to the Alaska pipeline, which was 800 miles long, went up to 4,700 feet over the mountains, has 11 pump stations, crossed 30 major rivers and streams and 3 mountain ranges. It took 2 years to build that. 2 years, baby. In 2 years, we could have a straw into the Snake River filling Lake Mead.
Or didn't I hear that they're saying the monsoon's going to be...
I think it's a great idea.
My brother and I had this concept of around the country, cisterns across sections of the United States, and having a water pipeline. So if some parts of the country need more, we can send it there. If they need less, we send it there too. And I don't think there would be an EPA issue because it's water.
That's the point.
Yeah.
It's not petroleum going through a 3-foot diameter. It's just water.
Water.
And now I've also heard of a pipeline to Puerto Penasco. We're gonna put a straw in the ocean in Puerto Penasco. Now, if I had my choice,
do you want to drink Snake River water?
I would rather the Rocky Mountain upstream.
Always drink upstream.
I'd much rather the Rocky Mountain snow melted Snake River water. Yes.
Well, it's very expensive too to desalinate. What is the word?
Desalinate. That's close.
Desalinate the ocean water.
All right. So I think whoever Steve Grace is, he may be onto something here. An 8-foot diameter pipe from the Snake River. Now, I have no idea how we negotiate with the people downstream from the Snake River that are using that water, but we'll get to that in another
That was my question.
On
who,
another
who
day.
Who wants to share?
The water rights,